This is a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho. H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you could call me.
Welcome into another edition of the Naked Bootleg Podcast presented by the Boston Herald. And we are on to week 15 of the NFL season. 3 weeks to go, Adam, and I can't believe that we're almost over here, but that's where we're at.
Yeah. Things are getting down to crunch time, and there's a lot of things to discuss. I think, you know, you look back at this Dolphins game, and it's almost one of those crossroads games, a late season loss. You don't see it very often from the Pats. They didn't look good. There's obviously excuses that could be made with the fact that Gronkowski was out, and I feel like the offense wasn't very good at all. But, you know, part of me thinks, too, a lot of the absences of some of the guys that were out were being held out for this Steelers game. That's pure speculation on my part. But, you know, I think, you know, they weren't necessarily looking forward to this game, but they weren't necessarily worried about losing that Dolphins game as much as they would be this one.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think that we heard a lot of hyperbole coming out of all sorts of talking heads after this Dolphins game about what it means for Brady and is, you know, is he injured? Is he done? You know, all these things. And, you know, we wanted to just break down kind of the areas of concern that we have that are, you know, not of that ilk of Tom Brady's headed for a cliff or anything like that. And the one that I pointed to directly when I watched this game back was the offensive line. Yeah. You know, I really think that any great offense, you know, throughout the history of the NFL, if you look back at it, the one thing that can hinder it when it has a great group of skill players and a great quarterback like the Patriots do is the offensive line. You know, it can really blow up an entire offense, you know, just by having guys that can't pass protect. Yeah. And, you know, I think that the interior of the Patriots offensive line in particular, even though, you know, the tackle positions have actually been okay. And I think that those three interior guys, Tooney, Mason, and David Andrews, are still, you know, question marks. And they've had good seasons, especially Andrews has really had a good season from what he had a year ago. But, you know, it was very telling to me on that Monday night broadcast that John Gruden said that the Dolphins specifically picked out Joe Tooney as a guy that they could target. The fact that the teams are still saying that about Shaq and Joe Tooney is not exactly great for the Patriots, I'd say.
Yeah, I think, you know, run blocking, this is more of a run blocking pair of guards. And I think that Tooney is a guy that is really good on, if you want to get him on the second level for screens and stuff like that. When you put him up against a much bigger defensive tackle, which is most defensive tackles, because he's not a big guy, then it's a matchup concern. And if you get him sort of taking a step back in pass protection, then they're already, you know, sort of bull rushing him backwards. So that's sort of, you know, putting him at a disadvantage, you know. So they're not really that big at that position. And as far as Mason goes, he brings them a lot in terms of the run game. I think he's still one of the more ferocious guys out there. He's very quick. He's strong. He brings power to that game. He's another guy that gets to the second level very well. And so, you know, these guys have their strengths, but when it comes to pass protection, they're just not quite as good as some of these other guards in the league. So, you know, I still love Andrews. I think he's probably, you know, one of the more indispensable guys on that line. Even though there's guys behind him that have played well. I think overall the line has a lot of pretty good depth, especially what we've seen these last few weeks at the right tackle spot. And with Karras coming in and on the interior in certain spots, I think, you know, this team has a pretty good offensive line. It's just you know, lately, you know, it's been tested, and you know, this Steelers front's going to be tough. I mean, you know, even with guys like T.J. Watt on the outside, that you know, that's, you know, these guys present some real challenges.
Yeah, you know, and we'll get to that in a minute. And just to wrap this up, you know, the biggest thing with Tooney is that when he gets beat badly, and it almost always results in a sack or a big hit on Brady. Over the last couple weeks, at least, that's the trend that's kind of, you know, reared its head. And that is one of those things as an offensive lineman that's kind of just part of the gig, where, you know, you play, you know, 60 snaps of great football, and then you play one really bad one, and everybody remembers the one really bad one. Right. So there is sort of that kind of element with Tooney. When you watch him from a snap-to-snap basis, it's not as bad as it is when it looks, you know, when he gave up that sack on Monday night, when the pocket caved in on Brady. You know, that those things, I understand. I think the biggest thing is coming out of this Miami game was when you watch Brady, the one thing, you know, a lot of people, what's wrong with Brady? I think the biggest thing that was wrong with Brady was that he didn't trust his offensive line to hang on to the football or stand tall in the pocket for a lot of that game. Throwing off his back foot, you know, kind of looking down at the rush, waiting for it to come after him. The pocket was not necessarily collapsing on him too quickly in most scenarios, but it was kind of caving in slowly. And you could kind of see that lingering effects happening on Brady, where he just wasn't confident in the pocket like he normally is. So, you know, I think that, you know, you look at the defensive side of the ball, obviously there's holes, but we already knew that those holes existed. We've known that they've existed all season. We know that Brady's going to be fine. We know the coaching staff is going to coach a better game than it did on Monday night. So really what it comes down to is what could really, you know, shoot this team in the foot in the playoffs and cost them a run at a Super Bowl. And, you know, if the offensive line is not going to perform the way that I think it's capable of, I mean, Dante Scarnecchia has said that they had four starting tackles on this team, with including Cole Crowston in that mix. They now only have three of them because Cannon is on the IR now. But this offensive line on paper is good. You know, they have a lot of good players that can do stuff, and Shaq Mason and Tooney especially are great run blocking as well. So, you know, I think that the unit is there, the skill is there. So it's not completely, you know, sky is falling by any means, but it's just something to look at. But let's go on to the Steelers here, because this is like the game of the year here for the NFL, maybe, especially in the AFC. I mean, there's been some good NFC showdowns, but this is about as good as it gets for a regular season game.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Steelers, you know, I was pretty critical of them leading up to this game, because they weren't blowing teams out. But, you know, there is something to be said for the way you win and winning close games. And they've been doing that. They've been finding ways to win.
7-1 in one score game. 7-1. So, incredible stat.
Yeah, it is. And so, you know, I don't think this is going to be a blowout. So I think the Steelers are going to be, you know, comfortable in this setting. Whereas the Pats a lot of times have been sort of blowing teams out. And then last week, I feel like part of their problem was, you know, they couldn't get that lead where they could sort of, you know, get the other team out of its running game and, you know, could sort of control the tempo and the pace of the game. And this is another game where you look at it and you say, well, you know, the Steelers could get up by a score or two. And, you know, the Patriots against the Dolphins, I felt like it was either a dump off or a deep shot. And, you know, there wasn't much of an intermediate threat. Now that Rob Gronkowski's back, you might have that. You're definitely going to have that element again. But how quickly is he going to be worked back into the game? Is he going to have his legs under him right away? You know, so in terms of the offense, I feel like the Patriots are going to be in much better shape than they were last week. But will it be clicking right away? Who knows? But, you know, this is a huge game. The Steelers are a good team. And, you know, the one thing that I look at as far as an advantage for the Pats right now is, you know, with with Ryan Shazier out at linebacker for the Steelers. This is not a great Steelers defense right now.
Yeah, and prayers to Ryan Shazier, I gotta say. I mean, I don't know what the situation is, the latest on that is now, but a really scary injury that, you know, we all hope that he pulls through and gets back on the field at some point next year. But I agree. I mean, this Steelers team has frustrated me all season as a Pats fan, you know, trying to get them some more losses here. And they just keep on pulling out these one-score games. I mean, the Colts, the Bengals, the Ravens, the Packers. There's so many examples of this team that games where they clearly should have lost. And they just keep on pulling things out. The Bengals game is probably the best example. I think they were down, 14-0, 17-0, something like that at one point, and they come all the way back. It really does speak to how good this offense is, though, right now. The defense, I think, is better than it was a year ago, but I think that it still has a lot of the same flaws that it did in the AFC Championship game. The secondary is still not very good. The quarterback group is still not very good. And without Shazier, the linebackers are not very good. They have those two guys in the middle to it, and Casey Hayward, or two of the better defensive tackles in the game. And then Bud Dupree and T.J. Watt are good edge rushers. So they do have a defensive line that could get some pressure on Brady and you know, muster up a pass rush. But those corners, especially if Joe Hayden doesn't play in this game, which it probably sounds like he's going to, be back, but even then he's, you know, in his first game back from an injury and probably at 100%. And, you know, other than Artie Burns, they really have nothing behind him, you know, in terms of cornerback position. So I think that in a similar way that this defense is very beatable, the same way that they beat it in the AFC Championship game. I just think that this offense right now, and maybe it was kind of at this level last year, but I don't know if I quite thought it was at this level going into that AFC Championship game. This year, I mean, the three killer bees, whatever you want to call them, Ben, Le'Veon, and Antonio Brown, are playing at all pro levels at the moment. All three of them are. Ben had a rough start to the season, really started to pick it up the last month or so, and has been lights out the last couple weeks. And Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell need no introduction, you know, from us. So it's really, in my opinion, it's a mismatch on defense. On paper, especially, I mean, this is like the biggest test the Patriots have had all year by far defensively, I'd say. And we're going to need some Belichick, Matt Patricia magic here. Those two guys, I think, are really going to have to scheme ways to cover up some of the holes against the Patriots, Steelers offense, because they have a lot of weapons that kind of could attack the weaknesses in the Patriots defense, especially looking at Le'Veon Bell and the front seven versus that offensive line of Pittsburgh and Lev. You know, the offensive line is one of the best units in the league also, and they have a bunch of really blue-chip type players like David DeCastro, Mike Pouncey.
Yes.
You know, those guys are elite. Castro is the best guard in the game, in my opinion. So, yeah, I mean, that's a mismatch, no matter what way you slice it.
Yeah, I feel like both defenses have to just prevent big plays. I think that's sort of going to be the strategy again. It's worked for the Pats in the past, where when you're playing those Steelers, when they have, you know, been, and they do this a lot, but, you know, they just try to keep everything in front of them. And then when the field crunches in the red zone and closer, they limit to field goals instead. That didn't work against the Dolphins because the Dolphins were able to get six a few more times than usual. So, but against the Steelers, you can't. It's not like you can press these guys and sort of not give enough safety help because, you know, and blitz and all that stuff. Because if you have one less guy in the secondary and Antonio Brown's running free, that's a touchdown. You know, you're going to need extra help with Antonio Brown. I don't care how many. Or I don't care who is covering him. He's just too fast. He's faster than anybody back there. So their big playability for the Steelers is something that, you know, is going to be stressed all week, I think, or has been probably by the Patriots defense. And, you know, as far as, you know, the Steelers offense is healthy. You know, a lot of times they come into these games with guys banged up, either losing Bell or Brown or somebody, you know, somebody will be out and somebody will be banged up and they won't be at full strength. And again, they're a much tougher team at home, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of things that fall the Steelers' way in this game. And, you know, you got to think that the Patriots have to play their best game to win. You know, they can't come in with a B-minus game and come away with the win like a lot of teams on their schedule, you know, during the sort of the middle of their season. So, you know, this has got to be sort of an A-plus effort to come away with a victory.
Yeah, I think that what you said about getting a lead and playing with a positive game script is really the key in this game for the Patriots. They're not, you know, obviously they can come back from any deficit. I'm pretty confident in that. But I think that it would be really behoove them to play from in front in this game and get that early lead. And that's, you know, really what the Patriots' MO has been all throughout the Belichick years is getting that first half lead. They're always a good first half team.
Yeah.
And they really tend to go into a lead at halftime. They get that possession at the first kickoff of the third quarter and they go from there. That was kind of what, you know, when you look at the Miami game, that's what happened. You know, they had a terrible, god-awful first quarter. And it really put the whole game out of whack from a Patriots perspective. It just didn't feel like a Patriots game the entire game mainly because it wasn't their type of script that we're so used to that, you know, seeing. Even earlier in the season when they were struggling a little bit, they were still in positive game scripts for the most part. And you know, the losses like Carolina and Kansas City, those two games, both of them, they were in pretty good shape until the fourth quarter. So, you know, I think that that's a huge part of this game, positive game script. And also, I think the other thing is that I think they need to run the ball a lot more than they did in Miami and a lot more than maybe they even have all year. I almost think this is kind of a perfect game for to put Brady under center for a while and pound the rock right down the middle of the Steelers' defense, especially without Shazier in there. They really have nobody in the linebacker group that really scares you anymore. And those front four guys are all beasts. But, I mean, I think that they can block them if they're, you know, specifically targeting to block them. So, you know, you double-team Casey Hayward. You do some tricky things with him maybe too. Some phantom blocks, some double-teams, some traps, that type of stuff. And I think he really can run the ball. And I think if you do that, then this secondary, still on tape, is extremely undisciplined and gives up a lot of big plays on busted coverages, and they're not you know, on the same page back there, especially in that Ravens game. They gave up a bunch of big plays busted coverages. So if you can get, you know, ahead on downs and stuff like that, and then start pulling out the play action passing game and the misdirections and the crossers and the intermediate stuff, it's going to break down in the secondary a lot like it did in the AFC Championship game. Pretty confident in that happening. So I think that that's really establishing the running game, like we've been saying, as kind of the thing, the cog that moves the offense from first down to first down. And then allowing Brady to then pick apart the secondary in kind of a play action, big passing game, chunk play type strategy would be, you know, I think it would be a big win for the Patriots. Last week, the Ravens ran for 152 yards against them. Cincinnati ran for 130. Jacksonville and Chicago earlier in the year had some success running football. So I think that there is a strategy there that can kind of a blueprint, I should say, from Baltimore especially, who really ran it right down their throats with Alex Collins for a lot of that game, that would really benefit the Patriots, both, you know, to keep the defense off the field a little bit, because I do think that the Steelers' offense, if you give them enough opportunity, is going to put 30 points on the defense, and also just to control the game offensively and really dictate what's going on the field.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the way to go. In fact, I wrote about that for this morning's Herald. Like, you know, you get a, you know, if you run the ball a little bit and establish that, I think this is sort of a secondary point to that, is you can get Gronk's rhythm into the offense a little bit better if you get him blocking a little bit. He'll just get his game feedback a little quicker if, you know, he's blocking rather than running routes. And then, you know, then he can sort of get going in the passing game a little bit easier.
His blocking is super underrated still. Like last week in Miami, I think that was the biggest thing, that maybe even bigger than them missing him in the passing game, was they like couldn't run the football because they didn't have him.
Right.
It was like they tried to run the football, but every single time they were trying to, you know, have the receivers block in the same positions that Gronk would block. Chris Hogan a bunch of times just got, you know, manhandled by a linebacker or a defensive end trying to block him, kind of like a Gronkowski style block. You know, without him out there, the running game was really a lot worse. Maybe worse than the passing game was.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like this is what they, you know, this is what they need as far as having him back. But you know, when they get these running backs back in the game and, you know, have Devlin and can really power teams and use Devlin as a lead blocker, then that's what they want. You know, that's, you know, it gives them a bread and butter that they can rely on if everything else breaks down, you know. And, you know, going back to that Dolphins game, and something that they can't have happen again is have Brandon Cooks get shut out like this. And now, you know, I feel like not having Gronkowski out there hurt Cooks a little bit because they could pay more attention to him. But at the same time, you know, he's got to be a threat. You know, he's got to be somebody who Brady can, you know, hit on these deep crossing routes and deep just nine routes or whatever. I feel like, you know, if he can get going too, it just opens up the middle of the field. Well, it's like one hand washes the other. It's one of those deals where, you know, yeah, it'll help to have Gronkowski back, but they also need Cooks to be himself, you know, to be what he's capable of, because, you know, it's sort of an all hands on deck type of deal. Like you said, you know, with the way the Steelers have these breakdowns in the secondary, I'm pretty confident that Cooks will be able to get open. This is sort of a week where the offense can shine for the Pats.
Yeah, you know, the thing that frustrated me of watching the game last week with Cooks was that Gronk wasn't out there, and they did a good job, Miami, of almost doubling him on every single play, or at least rolling the safety his direction to protect against the big passes. But feed him the ball, you know? I mean, like, design something to get him the football. I mean, this is the guy, especially without Gronk in the lineup, that's your number one option offensively, you would think. At least that's what it appears to all of us. And, it's one of those things where, like, they kept on running him deep on all these routes, which is his bread and butter. I get that. But it wasn't working. And you know, they could have gotten him the ball in reverses, maybe wide receiver screens, you know, do something. I mean, I don't know if it would have worked, but at least try to get the football in his hands, because it really, the offense was not moving at all, you know, with him being shut out the way that he was by the Dolphins secondary. Without Gronk especially, it didn't make any sense to me why they didn't try to incorporate more ways to get Brandon Cooks the ball other than just having him run his normal route tree and hoping that he was going to get open against double coverage eventually. There was a lot of like little nitpicky things that, you know, were poor about the game offensively in terms of play calling and Josh McDaniels and the staff. But, you could nitpick about third down play calls or this and that. But just from a big picture standpoint, not feeding Brandon Cooks in a game where they didn't have Gronk was really bizarre to me. You would have thought that in this game, and not, you know, 10 targets that are you know, interceptable targets. But 10 targets, you know, was probably a good benchmark to look at, or at least 10, you know, attempted targets or touches or whatever you want to call it, if you want to throw in some reverses and stuff like that too. You know, I thought it was weird that they didn't really try to give him the ball more, especially as the game went along and it was apparent that they weren't going to be able to get much downfield separation on the Dolphins cornerbacks on the outside. You know, it wasn't that they didn't try to get him open in different ways in terms of route running, but they really didn't try very much stuff to get him open in terms of schematically different things that they could have done. You know, different rub routes, different pick routes, misdirection plays, big play action, running reverses, stuff like that. It just wasn't there. But let's look at these cornerback matchups, because I tweeted out yesterday about how Gilmore is not the guy that you want on Antonio Brown, and it got some traction. So I'm curious to hear what you think. I've seen some people say that they would you know, put Gilmore on Brown. I think Juju Smith is like probably the biggest X factor in this game for either team. So how would you match up against these Steelers wide receivers right now?
Well, I kind of agree with you. I also kind of feel like there isn't really a favorable matchup when it comes to Antonio Brown. There's no single guy in the Patriots secondary that is going to be a shutdown guy. Although, you know, like Malcolm Brown has had success against him in the past. So I feel like if you want to put Brown on him, or Butler, excuse me, Malcolm Butler, if you want to put Butler on him in the, in that scenario, it could work because it has in the past. You know, put a man up and have him, give him some safety help, you know, and see if that works. I feel like Gilmore, I mean, his strength is his size. You know, that's his main thing. I don't think he can run step for step with Antonio Brown and take him out of the game. I do think he's a good man cover corner, but Brown's just better. And like, you're not going to take him out of the game with just one guy. So if you can use Butler with safety help and then stick Gilmore on one of those other big receivers like Juju Smith-Schuster, then you know you're going to have success. So you know, I think also it's not something that they're going to do one thing or the other and just stick with. You know, they're going to have to be multiple. They're going to have to use some zone at times. They're not going to just, you know, go with one thing, I don't think. But, you know, I don't think that, you know, Gilmore on Brown is a great matchup for them. Just because, you know, Antonio Brown's a speed guy. I don't see Gilmore as a speed guy. You make one false step against Brown and he's 5 yards behind you and it gets wider as he goes. And, you know, I just don't, you know, I think Gilmore's got his strengths in man coverage, but it's not like, you know, Brown is going to get, you know, manhandled at the line of scrimmage and press coverage. You might take him off for a second. But the other thing people have to remember is that a lot of this this Steelers offense, you know, if they're going to have to cover for, you know, 5-6 seconds at a time sometimes. These guys, you know, have a way of blocking well for Roethlisberger, or he'll evade the rush, and, you know, and it becomes a scramble rules type deal. And, these Steelers receivers are good at coming back to the ball, finding open space after that point. So, you know, long story short, I don't think Gilmore is, you know, you snap your fingers, put Gilmore on Antonio Brown, and all right, you're taking him out of the game. I just don't think that. I think that your best shot is having Butler chase him around, try to have some safety help, knowing where he is at all times. But you know, you're not gonna shut down Antonio Brown regardless. He's gonna get his yards. You just want to keep him out of the end zone.
Right, which they've been able to do, you know, the last three games since 2015, that opener in 2015, the regular season game last year, then the playoff game last year, he has one touchdown. And it was that garbage time touchdown at the end of that opener after they won the Super Bowl in 2014 to make it 28-21, where the game was kind of already over. That's a win. I mean, I know he had two games over 100 yards and 77 in the championship game, but against the best wide receiver in the game, I mean, if you hold him to under 150 and no touchdowns, I think that you take that, you know, as the Baltimore Ravens had that went for them. You know, they gave up over 200 to the guy. So, you know, I think that strategy of putting Butler on him and then putting safety help over the top and having Butler play trail coverage on him basically and follow him around and then bracket him in with the safety is really the best strategy that anybody has ever really implemented against Antonio Brown. You know, especially in this last, you know, 3 or 4 years when he's really become Antonio Brown. Right. You know, I think that is in itself probably the best strategy I've ever seen another team come up with. And Butler, as much as he's had his ups and downs this year, if there's one thing that he can do is run. You know, he can definitely chase guys. I think that's one of those aspects where I compared it to like a basketball game where why would you take your center, Stephon Gilmore, and put it on a point guard?
Right.
You know, you wouldn't do that in a basketball game. You wouldn't, you know, if you're playing the Warriors, you're not going to put Al Horford on Steph Curry. You know, that's not going to happen. So I think that's very similar in this case. And I think that when you look at, you know, going back to that championship game, the skill group on Pittsburgh side of the ball is very similar, except they have Juju Smith-Schuster now, and he's going to play in this game. He didn't play against Baltimore because he was suspended also. But he's going to play in this game. And I think that it's a huge X factor for them because in the championship game, the biggest problem was that outside of AB, there was nothing else there that scared the Patriots. So they just manned up across the board against everybody else and just, you know, took their lumps when they gave up yards to those other guys. And, you know, it's still that same similar group besides Juju. You know, it's still Eli Rogers and Martavis Bryant and Jesse James at tight end. And Vance McDonald, I don't know if he's going to play, but he's more of a blocking tight end than a receiving tight end. So they really, other than Juju, they really are kind of in that same boat of not having a great supporting cast outside of Brown and Bell. And if you can put Gilmore on Juju and you take him out of the game, then that's a huge win for the Pats. I know Juju plays a lot more in the slot than Gilmore has this year. Gilmore is really more of a boundary corner guy. But I still think that he can do it. I think he can shut down anybody that they ask him to, really, for the most part, especially guys that are bigger body types like that. So if Gilmore can take Juju and really, you know, just mitigate the things that he's able to do, then you have the double team on Antonio Brown. I think that's a really good formula to slow down this passing attack, at least. We'll worry about Le'Veon Bell running the football. Another, you know, that's obviously a big fear too, but I think that in terms of this passing attack, like you said, you're 100% right. This offensive line is one of the best pass blocking offensive lines in the NFL, maybe the best. Football Outsiders has them as the best pass blocking offensive line in football right now. So you're going to have to play some really good coverage on the back end to win this game. The Patriots secondary is really going to have to play one of its best games of the season. More or less, you know, just a clean game. You know, you can't really have any too obvious breakdowns or anything like that. I think that's the strategy. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see Jonathan Jones get a few runs at Antonio Brown too.
Yeah.
Maybe Gilmore gets a chance every once in a while. That's one thing that's another, you know, good thing about the way that this Patriots secondary is built is that they have a lot of different options to throw at guys. You know, they have a lot of different bodies, a lot of different types of body types, a lot of different types of skill sets that they can kind of throw at all these receivers that they're going to play throughout the course of the season, whether it's an Antonio Brown or a different receiver, like a guy like a Julio Jones, who they played earlier this year, or Demaryius Thomas or Mike Evans. You know, they have the Gilmores of the world to take those bigger guys. They have the Malcolm Butlers and Jonathan Jones of the world to take the smaller guys. And everything in between. So that's another good, you know, thing for the Pats in this game is that if Malcolm Butler is not working on Antonio Brown, it's not like they don't have any other options. A lot of other teams, they don't have very many other options.
Right.
First two, maybe three guys at the cornerback position. The Patriots really have four corners that can start on a lot of teams right now.
Yeah, they do.
So that's a real big positive. And then obviously the safety play has been good all year for the Pats too, so it's another positive. And you know, a lot of people I know are also going to talk about how they're going to match up against Le'Veon Bell in the passing game after Kenyon Drake just, you know, tore them apart in Miami. Kareem Hunt did it too. You know, I think that the biggest thing is you know, I would expect to see Patrick Chung get Le'Veon in some of those situations where he flexes out wide as a wide receiver. The Patriots are well aware of Le'Veon Bell as a receiver, and in the past they've really treated him as a wide receiver in, on obvious passing downs. He's not going to sneak up on them like Drake did. I would be shocked if you see a lot in Roberts on him in too many scenarios.
I mean, it's all about finding matchups that will work for them. I do feel like David Noy plays, you know, and is out there. I feel like Van Noy is a guy that they feel confident that they can stick on running backs to. So, you know, it's just going to be, you know, are they going to be able to, you know, figure out what formations the Steelers want to have, isolate Brown on somebody, and, you know, can they tackle in the open field? Because that's what Bell does, is he makes you miss. And then he gets those hidden 3-4-5 yards extra, and then he turns it into 20 the next time he touches the ball. Or however many. So open field tackling is the key, really, when it comes to Le'Veon Bell and any of these guys. And the Patriots seem to be one of the best open field tackling teams in the league in terms of technique and fundamentals when it comes to that. But this is the biggest challenge, or one of the biggest challenges they'll see when it comes to, you know, one-on-one tackling. You know, Chung's one of the best in the league when it comes to that. You can't miss a tackle here, and because when the Steelers are at their best offensively, these guys are in open space and there's not a lot of guys around them, and you make that tackle and, you know, that's the limited gain, but you miss it and, you know, there's another 5-10 yards they can pick up. It's, you know, it's true of a lot of teams, but it's just because the Steelers are so good at making guys miss, like Bell and Brown and anybody, that it's these yards after catch can be killers. You know, I mean, they extend drives. It makes it tough to defend them on third and long. And, you know, I feel like, you know, if the Patriots are able to maintain their ability to keep guys to shorter gains and stop them in that regard, then that'll be huge. And then, like, you know, going back to Jonathan Jones, he's one of those guys that, you know, is able to keep guys to shorter gains. I mean, he'll get beat sometimes by a receiver, but it doesn't ever seem like he's he's so fast that, you know, he's able to get guys down on the first try. So there's going to be a lot of one-on-one matchups after guys catch the ball that the Patriots are going to simply have to make the tackle. And, you know, they can't let, you know, one reception of however many yards turn into double that just because of the missed tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're, you know, the Pats obviously have a lot of games still left to play, but a lot of teams are already looking ahead to the draft already. And it always baffles me. We talk so much about ball skills and, you know, pass rush moves and football IQ and all this stuff come draft time. And then we never talk about tackling for defensive players when it's easily the most important thing by any defensive player, really. You know, you can have all the talent in the world and all the speed and all the athleticism. If you can't tackle in this league, then there's really no use for you. So I think it's always interesting how we never – you know, tackling should be the first thing, and I think it is the first thing that Belichick looks at.
Yeah,
honestly, because he says it all the time. Yeah. Is that there's one, you know, aspect, one skill that's most important to defensive football, it's tackling. And the Patriots are always a good tackling team for the most part. They had some slip-ups in that Miami game with Drake where they couldn't get him down. And you saw the kind of the domino effect that had on the rest of the team. So, yeah, you know, I think people should pay a little bit more attention to tackling because too often in the draft we get caught up in all the other nuances of football. And, you know, oh, this corner, you know, can play the ball well, and this pass rusher can beat a tackle and all that stuff. Yeah, well, what about when the corner gives up a catch? You know, what does he do then? Because it's going to happen a lot. So, you know, you might as well, you know, see what the guy can do there. But, all right, I think we've broken this down every way possible.
That's what we do.
That's what we do, right? What do you got coming up this week?
This week was fun because I got to do a story on Daron Harmon and his burgeoning leadership skills.
Yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere for me. I mean, I'm not in the locker room every day, so.
Yeah, but it's funny because, you know, we in the locker room every day, you know, he's extremely nice to the media. There'll be times where he'll have a large scrum. And then, you know, some guys will, some reporters will back away, and then more will come back, and he'll keep talking. Like, he's just so gracious for us. But, you know, there is that competitive edge to him. And when he's making these speeches, like he did in the Dolphins game, where he sort of takes charge. And there's, you know, been some guys that I talked to we're saying he's really take a step forward in that regard, and it's about basically his evolution in that regard as a team leader, and not just you know, a good safety and somebody who's a good teammate.
Yeah, I think we see more of him this week than we have in the last couple of weeks with the big play threats that they have in Pittsburgh, but after that little speech that he gave, they really did play a lot better defensively. And in the fourth quarter especially, they played a lot better. Had a little bit of luck with that drop, Jakeem Grant drop, and not running for a first down when he should have. But, you know, they left the door open. And in any other game, when the Patriots offense was having a better game, I think that comeback might have been complete because the defense, you know, really clamped down, five straight punts to end the game. For Miami. For me, today, actually, I just dropped in the Herald a piece about the Patriots against playoff teams and also some of their numbers against the Steelers in the past two. Both very good success there. The only team since 2001 that are above 500 against playoff teams, you know, teams that go on to make the playoffs later that season. So bodes well for the Steelers game coming off of a bad game on Monday night. I thought I'd, you know, write about something positive from this Patriots team instead of all the negative stuff that we were all hearing. And I also want to wish all the Jews out there happy Hanukkah. And happy holidays to everybody else as well. We don't discriminate on this program. So
hope everybody's buying and receiving good presents. And if you're celebrating Christmas, you already got your Christmas tree up. We just cut ours down the other day at a tree farm, and you know, it's a great time of year, actually. You know, for me and everybody really else, you know, in the world. So Yeah, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, everything you might be celebrating. This is a good time of year, and be happy whether or not your favorite team wins or loses.
Quick story on that. So my apartment building, you have to have rules about how big your Christmas tree is because of fire hazard, apparently. So, like, you really can't have a big Christmas tree in our apartment, or at least you're not supposed to. So I thought that was funny. They sent out a big email saying, you know, just remember, don't burn down the whole building with your Christmas tree. So you know, no big Christmas trees in New York City, apparently. But that's all the time we have for this week. Only 3 weeks left of the season here for the Pats, and they'll play in Pittsburgh this week, and then finally some games at Gillette Stadium, back-to-back home games against the Bills and the Jets. So we'll be back next week to break down hopefully a win over the Steelers for the Patriots and a preview of another AFC East week with the Bills. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. We'll be back next week.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is H to the OV. I used to move snowflakes by the OC. I guess even back then you could call me CEO of the OC.